Hey, this is Meredith. This week, we're sharing one of the very first episodes of The Unfolding. Mark Schultz has shared about his story of adoption, often in his music. In this interview, he talks about how adopting his daughter changed the way he thought about a father's love. Prepare to smile, maybe laugh a little, and feel your heart warmed as you listen to this episode from the archives.
This huge thing went off in my head and I went, oh my gosh, this is me my whole life going, if I'm special and if I'm quarterback and if I sing and people give me standing ovations, I will be special enough that people will pay attention to me.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page. In the unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Mark Schultz is a talented and successful singer and songwriter and an incredible storyteller. One part of Mark's personal story is adoption. He grew up knowing he was adopted, and he's shared that story in songs and in concerts. But it wasn't until Mark was holding his own adopted daughter that he had a revelation about a father's love. He began to understand God's love in a way that changed his life. When did you realize you were adopted?
Gosh, I was probably in the third grade because I was going through my baby book and there was stuff in my baby book that my sister didn't have. She's not adopted. I've got a brother who's not adopted, 5 years older than me, a sister who's not adopted, a year younger than me, and I'm in the middle. And so I was like, hey, Mom, I see a discrepancy here. My sister has more stuff in her baby book, and why is that? And she said, well, it's because, son, you were adopted. And I said, I don't even know what that means. And she said, it means with your brother and your sister, that's just who we got. But with you, we got to go pick you out special. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. So when I got to be in the eighth grade, my sister was in the seventh grade, and we were in an argument over something. I remember she said, oh, yeah, well, you're not even supposed to be in this family because you're adopted. And I said, yeah, that means Mom and Dad get to pick me out special. They just got stuck with you. No choice. That's who they got. So I always love to tell that story. It makes me feel good.
Was there any sort of insecurity on your part or resentment on your siblings' parts?
No, you know what? My personality is such, I think that I never, if I look at setbacks, I never think, oh man, well, that's just, there we go. Well, my life's over. So what I think, well, man, I always wanted to be the quarterback in football, run track, play baseball, be the state champion, write songs, do concerts, get a standing ovation. I always want to do that so that my parents would say, oh man, we got the right one. We didn't pick a dud. You know what I mean?
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Mentally, that's how I do it. So instead of me looking at like, man, mm-hmm. I'm disappointed that my birth mom gave me up, I think more of, hey, the people that did get me, I want them to think that I...
They got a really great deal. Was that a pressure you felt to perform, or just it was just more of a positive motivation?
Yeah, I think it's a drive for certain. I think, you know what? I've never thought about this before, but for me, the idea of being ordinary or average... There's something in me that comes like my chest wants to blow apart and just go, mm-mm. No. Mm-mm. But growing up, it was like that. I would say that I would feel like, man, if I'm not special at something, then I feel like I'm dying on the inside. And I think that's probably why, you know, maybe that's my personality, but part of it, I think, is certainly being adopted and feeling like, man, I need to be special in some way to show my folks or to, you know, other people that know me to think, oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an incredible kid.
Yeah.
Were you literally quarterback and tracks to all those things you named?
So I was the quarterback in football, pitched in the state championship game, and we won. I ran track and played baseball in college, and I wrote songs and sang, and I was in the music thing. So all these things that were like, so growing up, I was the music guy that, I was the sports guy that did some music. And then after college, I was the, you know, because I wasn't going to go pro or anything, but I was like, oh, then I was the music guy that did sports. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it flopped a little bit, but
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things that people often think about if they adopt a child is, will they want to meet their birth parents? Have you ever wanted to? Or
no, I haven't. And one of the reasons I haven't is... for my parents, you know, I think there's something that, you know, my mom and dad, mm-hmm. and to me, it would be weird to say, hey, Mom and Dad, I'm going to go find my real mom. And look, I got the greatest parents and I got a great family. And so I don't feel like, man, there's part of me that's missing unless I find my birth mom.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it's cool. And I've thought about this before. I've always thought, man, what if I was doing a concert somewhere and my birth mom was there and I've got a song about being adopted. It's called Everything to Me, which really is a big thank you to my birth mom, which says, you gave me up. When you gave me up, you gave me everything. And man, a lot of adopted kids who, I call them kids, but they were adopted, now they're older or they're younger, will hear that song and they go, oh man, I never thought about that. I've never heard it framed like that. Like, man, I'm so grateful to my birth mom for giving me life because she could have had another choice that wouldn't include, you know, giving birth to me. So, so it frames it like that. And, I think it'd be so fun for me to talk about my adoption story and what a great, mom and dad I have, and then play that song and, but to have her there and say, you know what? This guy would be about the same age as my little guy that I gave up for adoption. And I hope my little boy turned out to be as happy as this one. That to me would be a beautiful moment.
It really would.
Yeah.
Well, you've shared your story a lot through song and on the stage and some, a lot of different formats. So I assume because you've shared your story of adoption, it probably elicits stories of adoption.
Yeah.
Any stories in particular that God used to work something in your heart as you process being adopted?
Yeah. So one of the cool things, I was doing a show in Jacksonville, Florida. And it was for like a women's conference. It was a big ladies' conference that they had me coming and play. And I talked about being adopted and I sang my song. And afterwards, there was a line of folks that wanted to say hi. And so I was visiting with people. And the last lady that came through said, hey, look, this is my adopted daughter. She's about 14 years old. She feels like she's been abandoned by her mom. And she feels like we're her family that just, you know, we're just like, oh, well, nobody else would take her, so we'll take her. And we don't ever say anything like that, but she's, that's just the weight that she carries around. And I said, man, where's she at? Let me talk to her. So, man, I talked to her for about an hour in the hallway, and I said, let me tell you something. I said, people can make mistakes, but God doesn't make mistakes. And I said, God's got a plan for your life, and what you don't want to do is miss out on that plan. And if you think, man, I'm adopted and nobody wanted me, you're beginning to hear whispers of you're going to miss your plan. So God meant something when he met you. He's got a plan for your life. And I can just tell you, don't miss it. Don't miss it. And I got to tell you, this girl was so interesting because she kind of had the goth thing going on and the, you know, real dark, just everything about her was kind of dark or whatever. I gave her a big hug. The next year I'm back in Jacksonville and I'm playing a concert. It's not a women's concert, just my own concert. And after the concert, I'm back out on the stage and this girl comes up with this three kids come up and she's like, hey, you didn't play my song. And I'm like, who are you? And what's your song? And it's this sweet, pretty girl. And it's the same one that I met the year before. And she said, these are my friends. They're adopted too. And she said, this is our theme song. Oh man. Totally reframed her story. Our conversation in the song, you gave me it. When you gave me up, you gave me everything. And she said, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss my story. Mm. That's good.
That is good.
That's good. So that was for me to go, oh my gosh. Well, I'm doing more than just saying I was adopted and telling my story. That story has a way of multiplying itself out when told well. And I feel like, you know, sometimes it just takes sitting down with somebody and spending time with them and sharing your heart and your story. And that was just a really neat moment for me. That was really cool.
I've heard you describe your birth mom as a hero. Yeah. Did you always think of her that way?
Probably not until I was getting ready to do a show. It was a benefit. It's an adoption benefit. And it was one of the first ones that I ever did. And I was getting ready to walk on the stage and they were getting ready to introduce me. And this lady who worked with adoption, was standing by the door where I was getting ready to walk out. And she said, have you ever met your birth mom? And, I said, no, I never have. And, she said, well, would you like to? And I was like, well, I think it'd be kind of weird if I showed up now. I was like, hey, remember me, you know? And she goes, well, I think it'd be, I think it'd be cool. And I said, you know what? I said, it's just a season in her life. And I said, she probably was going through a time where she was still had a career in mind. And it's just a selfish time for her when she was like, it's easier not to have a child. And this lady's face turned red and her eyes started to get like really big. And I remember she reached over and she grabbed me by the shirt. I'm getting ready to walk on stage and she grabs me by the, and she pulls me in. And just with this laser look, she said, did you just say selfish? And I said, well, I mean, I'm getting ready to go on stage. But what I meant was, I mean, and she said, let me ask you something. She said, and she was serious. She goes, have you ever been pregnant before? And I said, and I started laughing. I was like, I never have. Honestly, I've never been pregnant. And she said, okay, so if there's a young girl who's pregnant and she's not married, especially in the time when you were born, she said, there is a huge target on her back for everybody to look at her and say, oh, we know her story, and to ostracize her and to make fun of her and to talk behind her back, yet she carried you. And she said, and to give birth to you, one of the most painful things that a woman can do in her life, she chose giving birth to you over another option that would have been. And then she said, but hardest of all, she would have had to kiss you on the head and when you were first born and hand you to a nurse and say, I want so badly to give you a great life, but I'm not in the situation right now where I can give you the best life, but I know there's a Christian family out there that can, and they've been praying for you. So she handed you off, and that was the most painful thing a mom could do. And you know why she did it? She didn't do it out of selfishness. She did it out of love. Oh, man. And even though I was ready to walk out, all of a sudden the room just, everything just came to a stop and my jaw hit the floor and I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. That's right. And she kind of spelled it out for me. And ever since then, I've just thought of it like that. Like, no, it was not selfish. She's a hero to me because she chose life for me to be here, you know? And I'll say this, I went to do a concert once. I was in Texas, and there was a girl who was a cheerleader. Her and her mom came to the concert, and after my concert was over, she came up to me, and I had played that song, and she said, we had to come see you. Just beautiful little girl, high school senior, because I just gave a little boy up for adoption. And she said nobody knows. None of the people in this room even know. But she said, I just have a question for you. And I said, what is it? And she said, do you think my little boy will hate me one day? And she just had tears running down her face, and I grabbed her, and I wrapped my arms around her, and I just held her, and I said, you are a hero to me. And I said, I just want you to know you're a hero to me. And I held her like I would have held my birth mom, and she held me like I would have been her grown-up son. Man, that was really healing for her. And for me too, there's just a vulnerability there that like no other. I mean, you can talk about being vulnerable about things, being vulnerable about your story about being alive is and giving somebody life and having life. Mm-hmm. That was a special exchange. But I tell women that when I see them, if I'm doing a benefit concert and they come up on stage and they gave somebody up and hug them, I just say, you're a hero to me. You're a hero to me. And it helps in their mind reframe their situation, I think.
Adoption has always been a part of Mark Schultz's story, so it makes sense that he would adopt a child, right? But when his wife raised the idea, Mark had some serious reservations. Part two of his story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute.
Habib, you seem to me to be a naturally happy person, but I've heard you say that's not your natural disposition. How do you explain that?
I'm a regular human being. I mean, many people appear a certain way to you. It took a lot of work and training. So, you know, you've heard me talk about out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That means I'm spewing out what's really in my heart. You know, we get frustrated, we get angry about what's happening around us, we want things to be better. So if we dwell on that, it shows up in our conversation. But if we dwell on different things, what comes out of our mouth is better. That's why I appear to be happy, because I work on what's inside my heart. 1 Timothy 4, Paul is encouraging Timothy, do something good. And he says, have nothing to do with godless myths, but train yourself to be godly. You know, we go to the gym to train ourselves. We go to tennis and train and get our tennis game better or our football game better, et cetera. We can train ourselves to have better thoughts and have better actions. That's why I say, I'm not naturally like that, but I work at it. And I think a lot of people work at it too, not just me. I encourage people to work at their behavior, not just their sports and at their weight, you know. Mm-hmm. At HabibHabib.com, I have motivational minutes and inspirational minutes and talk a lot about these things. And it's just dwelling on the good in the world. There's still a lot of good in the world, and it can make us happier.
And now, part two of Mark Schultz's story.
So adoption has been a part of your story since third grade.
Yeah.
You've had a heart for orphans and a passion for orphans. You started an organization to help orphans, right? Yeah. Is that right? Well, tell me a little bit about that.
About 10 years ago, an organization came to me and said, hey, we know you're adopted. We want you to be a spokesperson for adoption. And I was like, what does that look like? And they said, you just have to put your face on a poster saying I'm for adoption. And I went and they said, come visit an orphanage with us in Mexico. So I did. And the lady at the orphanage, who's an American down there working, she pulled me aside and she said, you can do that. You can have your face on a poster. But she goes, you can do so much more. And I'm just going to ask you to do more than have your face on a poster. And she said, I don't know what that looks like, but I'm just going to challenge you to do more than that. So my plan was, hey, I do concerts around the country. I jump on a bus and go. I said, what if I started in California and went to Maine and pedaled my bicycle across the country and did concerts along the way and raised money for orphans? And people will really follow this tour like no other because they'll think there's a good chance he'll die. So we're going to give money to this thing because...
Just in case?
Yeah, we don't want to feel guilty that we just watched him ride his bike across the thing and he died and we didn't do anything. So let's just give him 20 bucks. And if it doesn't go well, at least we can say we helped. And so sure enough, man, I rode my bike from California to Maine, did 15 concerts along the way. I just ride my bike up to the church. I'd get off. There'd be 1,500 people there. I'd get out and do my show. All the merchandise money went to all the ticket sales, all the people that were following in there. And we raised $250,000 by the time we made it to the other side of the country. Yeah.
Now, you said that like it was easy to do, but riding your bike across country had to be excruciating.
Yeah, yeah. It was for about 12 days.
Hard?
Oh, it was unbelievably hard.
Okay.
And then at one point in time, my mind... asked my body on the bike, and I was there because I know this is what happened. They actually had a conversation, and okay. I was just there listening to the conversation.
How did it go?
It went like this. My body said, are we really doing this? 100 miles a day.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's 110 degrees out in New Mexico where we're riding. Really, dude? Are we really doing this? And my mind's thinking, okay, I could get off my bicycle and go back home and we could just downplay this and it wouldn't be that big a deal. But then I was thinking, I'm not doing this to, my mind saying, you're not doing this to see if you can make it across the country. It isn't about you. It's about the kids that you're riding for because you're going to be able to feed them and clothe them. These kids in Mexico, build them a new dorm to live in. And my plan was, after I had this conversation with myself, first the conversation was like, are we really doing this? My mind was going through and my mind goes, Yeah, you're really doing this. And I'm telling you, my body at that moment went from ready to give up and totally tired to it just went, all right, man, let's go. And then I was fine.
That was it? How many days was this?
12 days in, and it was a total of 62 days. So I had another 50 days to go.
Oh, my goodness.
So once I got through that, and would you believe one of my hardest days that I had because I got lost about 15 times, it was so funny, was in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah.
I'm coming into Champaign, Illinois. And what people don't understand about Champaign, Illinois, if you've never been here before, is number one, corn grows up on both sides of the road.
Yeah.
When you're coming through, and it's 100 degrees outside in the summertime, and the wind blows, but it blows over the top of the corn, not in the corn.
So you're missing out on all the breeze.
So you're just, it's like you're getting cooked in a Weber grill.
Mm.
That's what it is. It's not good. At all.
And was that literally one of your hardest days?
It was one of my hardest days. The reason it was hard is because the map was wrong.
Oh.
And I remember I would stop and talk to people and they would be like, I go, hey, how do I get to so-and-so? And the guy would be like, do you see that red barn down there? You're going to go to the red barn and turn right. There's a guy named Phil. He lives down there. He's got a blue truck. You go to Phil's house and turn left. And he was given directions like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We got laughed. So it was supposed to be like 75 miles and it turned out to be 120 miles on that day.
Goodness.
Just on the, so I finally got to the Midwest, Champaign, Illinois, and I was just like, get me off the bike.
I bet you were.
But that's the thing. I would have never done it for myself. But because I was adopted and because I wanted to give back and because this lady had challenged me, I said, okay, let's go do this. Let's get crazy and do something crazy and raise money. And we did. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever done.
That's awesome. So at some point though, your heart posture moved from just supporting and helping orphans to adoption yourself, right?
Yeah.
Or was that always something in the back of your mind?
No, it wasn't in my mind because I was like, man, I've had to work really hard to overcome, to be good at things.
Yeah.
That what if we adopt another person and they don't try like I do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And oh, okay, that's disappointing. So, but after that bike ride, my wife's like, so I have a song called Remember Me And she said, here's what we're doing. We're starting an organization called the Remember Me Mission. Remember me for all the kids that haven't been remembered and need places to live. And she said, do an instrumental record. All the money you sell goes into that. I'll write a children's book. All the money that it sells goes into that. So we started the Remember Me Mission, which makes my wife happy and keeps me off a bicycle. So that's the reason I started that and the reason it continues, which has been fantastic. And then we had a couple of kids, and even before kids, my wife's like, I think we need to adopt. My wife makes such good decisions that I just hand the decisions over to her.
It's
the smartest thing I've ever done. She said one day at church, she saw a little Chinese girl in pigtails run down the aisle, and she's like, we need one of those right there.
Oh, my goodness.
I was like, are you serious? A girl from China? I know nothing about China. And I was like, this feels like it's out of my comfort zone. She's like, we need to do this. So we put our name in, and I was like, honey, I don't know. And then one day I was writing songs, and I heard my wife scream, ah, from her office. And I ran in, and I was like, what is going on? She just looked at the screen. She pointed to it, and it was this beautiful little 5-month-old Chinese baby. And she just looked at me, and I just went, okay, let's do it. And we went over there, and she was just giddy. And I was like, but what if we're not real fond of her? You know, what if, I don't know, there's all these things going through my mind. But we went to see her, and it was like, oh, I'm staring at this little Chinese person, and they don't feel a part of me. They don't feel a part of, mm-hmm. you know, I know some people would just go, man, I just saw them and they were just part of the family. Mm-hmm. For me, that wasn't the case. And I was just like, that's a Chinese baby. And and my wife, of course, felt really connected. And mm-hmm. so we got her. But here's what happened. They said, you got 1 month. In 1 month, the baby will bond with you. But here in these first few weeks, the baby's going to have a hard time bonding with you. Number one, dad, because you're not Chinese.
Yeah.
And she's not seen a lot of dads. She's not seen a lot of males. The mm-hmm. mom, she'll bond with you a little faster, but it's going to be a couple, 3 weeks. So we take her to the hotel, Maya Mae Schultz, and we give her a little bath in the sink. And I'm holding her, and I start singing, Maya Mae Schultz. And she starts dancing around, and then she starts singing and laughing and all that kind of stuff.
How old is she? How old was she when you got her?
Now she's 8 months.
Oh, my goodness.
She's 8 months, and she's Maya Mae Schultz. So I went back the next day and told the adoption people, I said, hey, we got a real plum here. It took her about 4 hours, and she was laughing and at my singing and smiling. I got the video on my phone still. And they sat me down. They said, okay, so you know, this is not your daughter bonding with you.
Ah.
And I was like, well, I think she was, because I could feel that. And I just wanted to hug her and wrap her up. And they said, she is in a state of shock right now. But she has learned by being in an orphanage, if she is cute and funny and laughs and is entertaining and you find her interesting and she is special, she will get fed and she will get taken care of and she won't get forgotten about. And all of a sudden, this huge thing went off in my head and I went, oh my gosh, this is me. My whole life going, if I'm special and if I'm fast enough and if I'm the quarterback and if I run track and if I win the baseball championship game and if I sing and people give me standing ovations, I will be special enough that people will pay attention to me. And so the biggest change that came over to me is we adopt people now here on earth because God adopted us into his family. And so it's a blueprint of that. And I feel like God's saying, here's what I did to humanity. And now that's the blueprint. You go do it on earth. What I realized was to see from a kid's perspective is, do you see me? Am I doing enough? Am I special? From a father's perspective, when I look at my daughter and I hold her now and I look at her and I just go, I'd run through a brick wall for you. I just want to pour love on you. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to prove anything to me. I just want to love you and let that love just flow right through you and flow right out of you and be who God meant you to be. You be that person. And so I began to see in my adoption process, from the kid's perspective to the father's perspective, made it so easy for me to say, so this is how God sees me in his vision and how I see God as a child looking up. They are two separate things. And that's been one of the biggest things that's ever come over me. Is no way, I want to live like I'm just loved and just be me and don't miss my story. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Don't run on the hamster wheel as fast as you can to get attention. There's a bigger story to be told when you're doing what he's giving you to do through his love than there is to be the show, you know? People are listening to this and they may say, I have no tie-in to adoption whatsoever. I'd say if you're a Christian, you do. And if God's blueprint really is, has that image of, if you're a child and God's the father and you're looking at him saying, look how happy I can be. Look how, no matter I'm struggling, I can just work through this, or I want to be known as the best mom in the world, or I want to be known as the dad who makes more money than all the other dads who can provide for my family or whatever like that. And I wonder if God's just saying, hey, let me love you and just love your kids. Spend time with your kids and just invest in them and just do that. But everything else is for the show. Don't worry about the show. Just be who I meant you to be and love people the way I'm loving you. That's the story. And there's such a rest in that too. One says, I'm tired, but I got to keep going. And one says, man, you know what? It feels good to crawl up in your dad's lap. He wraps his arms around you, you just rest and you just go, ah, oh, because that's what the dad wants. And in the heart of the child, that's what the child wants. And, you know, I said to my son, we went to Starbucks and we were sitting on a bench. And I said, I put my arm around him. I said, you know what, buddy? He's about five. I said, I just like how I feel when I hang out with you. And he goes, I love you, daddy. And I go, that's it. It doesn't matter if I'm doing concerts, if I'm away doing shows and he's at home, but I'm doing concerts because I want to, you know, get paid so I can take care of my family better than anybody else. I love you, Daddy. Thanks for spending time with me. That's it.
So having that revelation for you personally, has it changed the way you spend your time? Has it changed? Is it playing out in your life in some
So here's how it plays
ways?
Out. In that when I'm hanging out with my boys or my girl or my wife and I'm hanging out, the old me would say, I'm here and you're talking to me, but my mind is thinking about the next song I need to write. Or the concert that I need to get ready for. And though I'm standing here listening to you talking to me, I'm not listening to you. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I know that when I'm talking to my wife and or I'm staring off and one of my kids has got my pants and they're pulling on my pants and I don't notice it. And my wife's like, would you look down? Because there's somebody there. So that's the me that says, I've got to achieve. I've got to do more. I've got to do that. The new me that I like to turn into, that I know when I'm doing it now, and I can, is the one who's present with my kids when one of them says, Daddy, look at this stick. And I turn and I look at the stick and I go, oh man, well, we got to go fishing with that thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a connection, and it's almost like a food that you give from an adult down to a child that says, I hear you. I appreciate what you're saying. And it's almost like, one is an adult form of ignoring. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And the other one is getting down with your child on your knees and getting behind them for what they're doing right then and for life and whispering in their ear, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Let's go together. That's I think, the change that's come over me is, it's interesting, you can be in one spot and in your head you can be a million miles away.
For sure. And I think we're in a day and age in our culture where we have a lot around us that encourages us to do that.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, all you have to do is pick up your phone and you got 1,000 things competing for the most important stuff in front of you.
Yeah, you feel like, oh man, I'm really connected. Man, look, I can email and I can text and all that kind of stuff. And yeah. People are committing suicide at a humongous fast rate because they're not real connections, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think the best connection is just to be present where you are and be there.
And you learned all that through your kids.
Through adoption, yeah.
Seeing adoption from a father's perspective changed Mark Schultz's view of God and changed how he lives his life. A few months after we recorded this interview, Mark and his wife adopted a second daughter, this time from the same agency through which Mark was adopted when he was a baby. You can learn more about Mark's music and about the Remember Me mission. Find out when you can see him on tour at markschultzmusic.com. He also posts pretty frequently on Instagram. Big thanks to Mark for sharing his story with us. If you want to hear more powerful God stories,
Subscribe to The Unfolding in your favorite podcast player, and you'll never miss an episode. Thanks to The Unfolding team, producer Jason Rackow, Elena Nowlin, Danielle Perez, and Jennifer Brisky. Our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how Habib can share inspiration and motivation at your workplace at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.